What's going on, Orlando City fans? Welcome back to the Lions Blog Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Rushnow, and today we'll be reviewing the Miami loss, the 3-2 loss to our interstate rivals. Very, very sad day. Very unfortunate. You win some, you lose some, though, in my opinion. But before we get started, I'd like to thank our sponsors, Cappy Subs. You can order over the phone at 407-647-9099. Or online at CappysSubsFL.com. Adam, where are they located?
Cappy's located at 501 North Orlando Avenue, Maitland, Florida, not Winter Park.
Make sure it's not Winter Park. Make sure to leave a five-star review. We will be reading them out on the podcast. Please leave a five-star review. I would really appreciate it. And with that, Daniel, how you doing tonight, man?
I'm good. I'm teetering on the brink of insanity.
Are you on the cliff?
No, I'm like Zlatan. I am the cliff. I'm about to push everybody off of it.
Chase, how are you doing tonight?
Doing good. It's my first night in my new apartment. My internet is terrible, so I'm about to go insane as well.
Yeah, feel that, Adam.
You know that meme that just it's the guy just like looking down and it just says pain.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I titled the episode. After the Portland loss, I just titled it "Pain." So pain.
This is worse.
Yes, is worse. I can't title it again. So I'll have to think of something else.
Pain, pain. Volume 2, something like that. I don't know. V2.0.
Yeah, something like that.
I got a better name for it.
What?
Empty chairs and empty tables. Dot dot dot.
I was thinking wake-up call, because I think today was a wake-up call to a lot of Orlando City fans. I think it was also a wake-up call to Orlando City, the team itself. We came out very flat-footed. We came out wayward. We just looked all over the place. Adam, do you kind of want to walk me through our start to the match?
Not really.
Like, how did you see our start? What happened?
Like, shit.
Yeah.
We came out totally not ready to play soccer, and Miami was, and it's extremely clear that Miami has been waiting a month for revenge, and they came out on the front foot and they took it to us. They had the majority possession. Whenever we got the ball, we turned it over quickly, and they were lethal, scoring I think in the 12th minute on a counter. They had several very, very incisive counters before that. And just looked like one team was ready to play and the other was not, which is, I understand if the other team gets the better of you, just, you know, they had the better tactics to open up. I was extremely disappointed and did not expect from a Pareja coach team for them to be look like they were asleep. And honestly, it could have been a lot worse if DK single-handedly, I mean, it was a shit game all around, but the first 20-ish minutes. What did he score in, like 21st, 22nd?
I don't remember the exact number, but it was around there.
Wait, no. It was before that because Carranza scored at like the 23rd. Again.
Yeah.
And if DK didn't have that one moment, which was pretty much the only good moment of the game, I'm not even counting the second goal. That was just, you know, desperation heaps forward. I mean, decent goal, but whatever. The literally one good moment of the game came from a single moment of brilliance, and other than that, they didn't look cohesive. They didn't look like they knew they were comfortable with each other. And this was the team that had played 2 weeks ago, not the team that had been off for a month.
I was about to say that.
And the team that had been off for a month looked like they had been playing. They looked like they played a game last week. And so, yeah, by far the worst start and worst game. But since we're talking about the start, by far the worst start of the Oscar Pereja era. And not close.
You took the words right out of my mouth. We looked like the team that hadn't played since July 20th, had only played 3 games. Not the team that had played 7 games. and had last played only 11 days ago. We should have been at peak match fitness. We just didn't look at our best. We didn't look at our best. Yeah, we didn't look cohesive. Just all our passes weren't working. All our touches were off. Our defensive positioning was all over the place. And a lot of people are saying that could be down to the new system. But what was the new system? You know, a lot of people are saying we played with three center defensive mids. I personally didn't see three center defensive mids. Yes, we had three players that like to play that position, but Mendez was playing right mid this game. Chase, did you see that?
Yeah, Sabas was overall, like, you know, regardless of position and whatever system he was playing, I think he was pretty disappointing this game. But I think oftentimes we see our midfielders kind of not necessarily have much of a rigid position, but they're more so just kind of free to move by themselves, if that makes sense. But we didn't have like a clear second winger on the field. And I think the responsibility of that side kind of fell to Mendez in a lot of instances in the game. But just overall, I don't know if this was a system. I don't know if maybe there were some questions about fitness, like with Chris not starting, or maybe Oscar just thought that he needed a break because he did kind of start to cool down at the end of the tournament. But yeah, just we played a lot of DMs and we played, you know, one attacking midfielder, but there was nobody really to kind of drift out wide or to the right side. And I guess that was Sebas for most of the game, but I don't know. It was just overall there wasn't much coming from really either wing, I guess, in like the first half at the very least.
All right, now let's move on to the first goal, the Miami's first goal. And I think I'm going to take the lead on this one. And there are three players I want to highlight really quickly. And the first one is Mendez. A tricky back heel that didn't come off goes all the way through the midfield, which is the area where Miami were attacking. And it was clear that they were attacking it from the off. So that was kind of a dumb move on his part. So he back heels it into the midfield. They latch onto the ball and they're racing forward. Okay, the second player I want to highlight is Antonio Carlos. I'm not sure what he was doing. I feel like I'd have to rewatch it a couple more times. I've only watched it once or twice, but he doesn't really pay enough attention to the player making a run to his right. And the player gets passed the ball on the player gets passed him very easily. And so he gets taken out of the play because his positioning just looked off there. I think a semifinals, a quarterfinals, Antonio Carlos gets that pass cut out. And it's like 11 days have gone by and we've just seen a whole new team. And so Carlos looks poor. And then Galese, in my opinion, should not be beaten at his near post there. He should not be beaten at his near post at all. So those are the three players I want to highlight. Daniel, I know you didn't see the goal live because of blackout issues. But after watching the highlights, do you kind of agree with that position?
Absolutely. Excuse me. The goal itself was something taken out of a preseason friendly where you have one team that is, you know, better than the other, and they just walk through like a hot knife through butter, and they just cut us open. They press and cut us open, and as you say, Galese makes a half-hearted attempt to make a serve. Gets beaten in a position where, you know, a goalkeeper of his quality would expect to do better, especially when you think of the saves that he made during that tournament. So, I don't know. It's just a goal that's just too easy. I mean, you think there's a coach, Oscar Pereira, he's going to be dissecting that. It's going to drive him nuts on his airplane ride home tonight.
There's a lot that's going to drive him nuts tonight.
He is going to be thinking of that goal. And he's, I tell you, it wouldn't surprise me if he's on that plane chewing those players out on all the way back, because it's just not acceptable. It's like, as Adam said, like, you can accept when you're beaten by somebody that's better. And I'll give credit to Miami, because they prepared well for tonight's game. They were ready, and I told you in the last podcast they were going to be ready. And congratulations to them, because they wanted that result more than Orlando did today. You can't begrudge a team for that desire, but we made it very easy by not doing what we should do. And this first goal was just like, if you wanted to show someone one highlight of how this game was, you show them that first goal. And that's pretty much what it is. It looks like Orlando 2018 making a guest appearance today.
Yeah.
That's what it looked like.
Chase, I want to get your thoughts. How disappointing is it to see three of our better players from the MLS's back tournament kind of combining to, you know, drop a goal early on? I mean, we highlighted the fact that we cannot let Miami score early on because that's just going to play the game right into their hands. Luckily, we did get the equalizer, which we'll talk about in a second. But how disappointing was it to see three of our big name players kind of just dropping an egg?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's super disappointing, and it's, I don't know if it's a bit of a, maybe we're just kind of coming down off of the high, I guess, of playing so well in the tournament and having such consistent performances. And this is just a little bit of a, I don't know, a reality check, I suppose. But yeah, just that goal, first off, we shouldn't have lost possession. Like, Sebas really had no reason to attempt like a back heel of a player that was like maybe like 10 yards away. So it's extremely dangerous, particularly in the midfield. And when they are a team that have players that can hit you on the counter from the wings and Rodolfo through the middle. And then, yeah, Antonio Carlos, he did have the runner going off to his right, and sometimes that kind of makes it hard for center backs, but I feel like he should have been able to recognize that Janssen was kind of coming over. And then maybe they kind of shifted out wide, and the danger could have been kind of checked and marked out. And then, yeah, Pedro, like, no goalkeeper in the world wants to get beat at their near post. And if you watch that goal again, like, there isn't much power in the shot. I mean, Pedro really didn't get down fast enough. And I think maybe this goal is just kind of a, like, this goal is a representative of this game where it's just like a lot of players that we know are of a higher level than what they showed today just played down for whatever reason, whether it's a mentality thing or just, I don't know, maybe they're tired after, you know, having a deep tournament run and, you know, kind of a turnaround into the regular season. But yeah, I don't know. It's just players definitely playing down, and I don't think it's something that we're going to see, you know, consistently rather. I think they'll kind of get back to the level that they were playing before. But yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a head scratcher with the dip in quality from, you know, the tournament now to this game.
Now, Adam, I figured I'd give you the DK goal. What a goal, man!
The one highlight of the match. In my
the one highlight.
I'm not even
going
to bother with the second goal.
It was
a desperation goal.
It was either Mendes or Juan passes the ball into his
DK,
feet.
And DK, that turn.
DK turns LGP for the first of like three times
tonight. A turn that looks like a man of his size should not be able to move in that tight of a circle. It was a beautiful turn. It was exquisite technique. He uses his strength perfectly. There's some players that are just big, and that I think that because they're big, people think they're strong, but they don't have what we call in football play strength. Guys that might be able to put up a bunch of reps on the bench press in the gym, but then when they get on the field that they just don't stack up for whatever reason. They have like the showy strength. Daryl DK has show strength and he has play strength. And you see time and time again defenders just bouncing off of him. Now, Andre Gonzalez Pires, one of the bigger, stronger defenders in MLS, bounced off him twice. He had a nearly identical turn a few minutes later, but that didn't end as well. And then I thought it was really intelligent of him to absolutely smash that ball near post at the keeper, because he knows that the far post is pretty much his only chance to hit that in on the first. He knows he's not scoring, but he doesn't really have a cutback option, and the only option to put the ball in the net is really to curl it far post, but that's extremely difficult from that angle, and he knows he's probably not going to be able to do it. So what he opts to do is just use his big frame, which and long legs and strength to absolutely blast a rocket at there's no way that Robles can catch, and it predictably bounces off. Happens to bounce right back to him. What I was really impressed by it was he showed the composure to get over that ball and hit it on frame again. And he got lucky the third time and managed to hit it in. But I think that it was earned. The luck was earned. He made his own luck by doing everything right to create just out of nothing a chance earlier in the play. And then he was in a good position. He was ready for it. He almost poached his own goal. I know that sounds a little stupid. the eventual finish was a poach, but he created the opportunity for the poach to happen.
After this performance from DK, before we keep going on, Adam, really quickly, should DK be given the chance to start again next game?
Given that he was the one bright spot, I guess. That goal notwithstanding, it was a great goal. And of course, number one thing you want a striker to do is put the ball in the net. I don't think he was that impressive otherwise. His movement was okay. His holdup was okay. His passing wasn't great. His positioning and buildup wasn't great. There was a reason that Nani had to drop so deep, because the connections just weren't happening up top. And Tesho, for his faults, is very good at being showing to link up play in the top and to keep possession. And Mueller is also very good at that. And I think in the first half especially, we really, really, really struggled with that. We missed those players, and DK was not an adequate substitute. Maybe if Mueller starts again, we go with the two-man midfield or the double pivot, you know, then maybe you can get away with that with DK. But unless his... And I'm all for giving him an opportunity, particularly before Ayas arrives, to win a job. But I don't know if I saw enough to have confidence that he's ready to be a full-time starter yet, which I know people disagree with based on him probably being... Well, based on him scoring the goal and us having trouble putting the ball in the net.
And possibly winning a penalty.
And I disagree with that. We'll get into that later. It was good play by him. I just don't think it was a penalty. I thought it was more shoulder-to-shoulder and just incidental tough play. Reverse that, we would be very mad if it was given against us. That's where I'm at on that. But sure. I don't think I saw the consistency in his play to just right now be like, oh yeah, next six games start him. I'm not there yet. And again, he's young. This is his rookie year. We shouldn't expect that from him. I thought it was a good showing for what he is, but he's still a prospect in my opinion. He's not a starter.
All right. Let's go on to Miami's second goal. Daniel, did you see this one live?
The Orlando's second or Miami's second?
Miami's second.
Okay. No, Miami's second. I saw it. Yeah, and it's just I thought the player was, you know, Carranza. He's a very good, dangerous little striker. I mean, but he, again, I mentioned on Twitter, like right around, I think the time of around the halftime in our group chat, that our players lost their individual battles today. You know, man to man. And I thought Jansen was beaten extremely easily for the goal. I mean,
so sorry to cut you off, but this was something I did want to bring up. While Jansen did get beat man to man, I do think we have to give credit to Ben Sweat, because that is a perfect cross. Any other different cross and Jansen heads that away, even if it's a high one. I mean, that was a pinpoint perfect ball right over Janssen's head. He couldn't really do anything with it, and perfectly lands to Carranza, and he heads it perfectly to the back post. So I think credit needs to be given where credit is due.
I already gave credit to Miami earlier. they were extremely prepared for the game, and they played a good game. I mean, for a team that has not played in a month, that was a great performance by them, with a lot of energy and a lot of resilience. And you're right, the ball from Sweat was a good ball. He put a couple in like that. And I just feel Jansen should have done a little bit more. Like I felt like he jumped, but he didn't really get high. He didn't get there enough, if you know what I mean. But Carranza, you know, they spent some decent money on him. He's got the young DP tag, and he showed it. A very good finish, and it was right into the corner. Again, we can always look at it from different views, but I felt it could have been a little better defended as well. You know, Sweat did get the ball in, you're right, but maybe he had too much time to get that ball in. Jansen maybe shouldn't have gotten beaten like he did, but, you know, it's one of those things. It's another moment, and it's another goal, and...
It looked like a goal from 2019, because one thing we saw with JOC is we allowed crosses. Moutinho and Juan definitely would kind of stray off the wide players and allow them to put the ball into the box. And to some extent it worked. We didn't concede from a ton of crosses, but sometimes we did. And Juan just seemed to back off. He didn't go fully fledged out there and try and tackle him. And I understand it's 1v1. He could have been beaten, kind of like how he got beaten from the Minnesota player. Mm-hmm. But the way he just kind of strolled out there and then allowed Sweat to put in the perfect ball was pretty mm-hmm. frustrating.
Well, you don't, as a defender, you don't always have to win the ball. You know, we always have this little fascination with defenders that everything they do, they have to win the ball. It's not always the case. It's just sometimes getting into the passing lane and just blocking off the angle from which they can benefit. And we didn't do that enough. And you bring that up about last season as well. We gave them so much time last season just to throw the ball in the box. There was no cutting off of any angles or nothing. It was just basically, yep, let them kick it in and we'll just figure it out from there on. But we didn't figure it out that much. And it was uncharacteristic, you know, from the defense in my mind for the every phase of that goal. And, you know, credit to the player for this cross, but again he had plenty of time to put it in there, so it's again very disappointing.
All right, Chase, Miami's third goal. This one was a real punch in the gut. Pizarro's unmarked. Mueller is the player who's supposed to follow him into the box. Instead, he stays on the outside of the box. Pizarro gets in there. Ball gets flicked on, lands at his feet, kind of like what happened with Nani. And, you know, this is why I kind of say you win some, you lose some, because we got lucky. The ball bounces to Nani. He puts it in the net. Very similar thing. While this is a flick on, the ball flicks on straight into Pizarro's feet. One times it bottom right corner. Very clinical finish. Very good finish, in my opinion. And, yeah, so Pizarro doesn't get marked, puts it in. What were your thoughts on the third goal for Miami?
Yeah, I think you said it. The biggest issue with this goal is just the lack of marking in the box. And I think it was Sebas. Like, he wasn't really on anyone either. And Chris, too, you know, Pizarro kind of trailed in. And Chris was maybe not necessarily marking him, but he was the closest player to him before he kind of made his move in. And he wasn't tracked at all. And he was just free, and, you know, he's their DP. He was their marquee signing. Like, there's probably no one else that you would want the ball to fall if you're an Inter-Miami fan, I guess. And, yeah, he put it away decently on his right foot. I'd have to see it again, but I remember in real time thinking that maybe Pedro could have done a little bit better, which I kind of thought, I guess not the second goal, but, yeah, like I said on the first goal and here too, like, it was a little bit of a question. But yeah, I mean, this was during a time when I didn't really feel like we had much going forward, and you know, Pizarro hit the post not too long after this, so this was kind of a time where we were you know, dead again, and I guess that it was, you know, not too far after the half restarted, and maybe that's kind of been an issue here in these first two games. It's something that I hope to stop. Like, once play restarts, we don't necessarily look like we're ready to get going until we kind of get back into the game a little bit. And really, in the second half, we didn't ever get back into it. But overall, it's just, yeah, it's just disappointing to fall down 3-1. When we conceded again, I didn't really feel like we had much of a chance of getting back in the game. And I mean, yeah, it sucks. Some players needed to do better, and that was kind of a theme throughout the night.
All right, well, the last little thing to talk about, really, is Nani's goal. But at this point, it's a good ball into the box from Mueller. Nani beats his man. Ball ends up in the back of the net. We're pushing for a goal, and Miami are sitting back. So there's not much really to analyze about that goal. Adam, let's get into it. PK or no PK? You said no. No. You said it's because you think it was harsh. I see contact, not shoulder to shoulder. I see his leg hitting DK's leg, from the side, from behind. Doesn't make contact with the ball. So for me, it is.
I think the referee was calling a particularly loose game, and, mm-hmm. and again, if that were, I'm okay with the no call, because if in the situation of a loose game, if that were called against us, we would be mad about it. We would be sitting here like, you know what, I think that is a PK. No, we would be like, no, it was shoulder to shoulder. I think you, especially in the heat of the moment, you can make an argument either way. The referee was calling a loose game. He saw shoulder contact and decided to let it play on. And you're not going to go to VAR to overturn that, because it's not close enough to go to VAR.
So. Okay, that, That's fair enough.
I'm okay with no call.
I also wanted to get your thoughts on the referee's performance. Again, kind of like with the Portland game, we're not blaming him for the loss, but he was allowing a physical game. There were a couple tackles from behind that were not yellow carded, and Will Trapp and Pellegrini both, and then they get yellow cards later in the game for kind of similar tackles, pretty nasty challenges. So if they get their yellow cards early that were pretty deserved at that time, I think we see a different Miami because they can't be as physical as they wanted to be.
Yes and no. I don't think where Miami hurt us was in physicality. I think they were making smart movements and intercepting passing lanes, and that was hurting us much more than, you know, the physicality of the pressing. So even if those two players are like on a yellow and not allowed to be like quite as close, I think their plan still works. We just weren't up to the game.
I think their physicality hurt us in that it disrupted our flow. We had a lot of times where we had to sit down and take free kicks because it disrupted our flow to the game, because we're a team that likes to keep possession and do one touch passing.
They still have eight other outfielders who can foul, you know. It's not, if those two get a yellow, it's not the end of that strategy.
It's not the end, but you get past one of those players on a yellow and that changes everything. Juan had to stop because he got the yellow in the first half.
He
had a couple instances where he could have fouled and he couldn't because he got that really yellow.
I see your point. I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think that they were still effective enough in their plan. And yes, those little aggravating fouls were annoying. And certainly those yellows were deserved. But again, the referee decided to call a loose game. I think it was slightly in favor of Miami, but what are you going to do? I don't see much point in dwelling on this topic because there wasn't a single call that you can point. I mean, obviously, some people called for a penalty with LGP on DK. But other than that, which, again, I don't think you can 100% point to and say it was a penalty, there's no other one call that you can point to and be like, that obviously changed the game and was obviously the wrong call. And so at a certain point, you take it, and it's not the worst refereeing performance I've ever seen. Probably not even top 20 worst refereeing performances I've ever seen.
Oh, no, yeah.
And so
he was pretty consistent with the yellow cards and non-yellow cards. It was a consistent performance. It was just, we've seen other refs give cards, and maybe by the letter of the law, you know, a slide tackle from behind with your boot kind of coming up is usually considered a yellow card.
Yeah, you know, I think
that's all.
There's something that I want to touch on with this. I've been reading Twitter feeds since the end of the game, and the two biggest excuses I see coming from a good portion is, number one, Orlando was pro'd, which is bullshit.
No.
And the second one, talking about travel on the same day, more bullshit. Even the coach said it's not an issue. But no, it's just the tactic, the preservation, the protection of the golden child of Orlando City, where people are not looking at the performance, they're looking at everything else as an excuse. If we want to go by the rules and yellow cards, because there was one very prominent Twitter feed I was looking at today, and I'm not going to mention them by name, but you can go look and you'll find it. All they seemed to do was whine about the referee and yellow cards, even to the point where they complained where the guy didn't get booked for celebrating in the stands. I'm just like, you know, it's, it doesn't matter. It had no bearing on the result. And yeah, we want the rules to be the rules. What about Juan's handball in the MLS's back tournament? Do you remember that? In the penalty area?
Yes.
Well, I saw a lot of Orlando fans then saying things like, well, oh,
it was
the
end of the game.
It was the end of the game, so you shouldn't give it, meh, you know.
good point.
Who gives
That's
a fuck
point.
If it's the first minute or the 94th minute? It doesn't fucking matter. If it's in the rules, it's in the rules, right? So stop fucking whining like about the referees. I'm tired of that. It's like Orlando was played off the park at times today. Yes, the other team was aggressive, but you know what? How many times have we seen Orlando try and be aggressive? And sometimes they get away with it, sometimes they don't. It's not our fault as fans that the teams have not been conditioned in the past to be as aggressive as these other teams. I have no problem with a team playing with aggression. I have no team with them making fouls and chancing a bit, because I want to see my players compete. We shouldn't be here resenting the fact that a team does it and the ref lets it go. I mean, that to me is good refereeing. It's a physical game. Let it go. Unless you start seeing people kicking each other, elbowing each other, headbutting each other, then it's a problem. But it's an aggressive game. People want to win. You want a winning team? Well, we should be doing what Miami were doing. Give it back. You know, it's like, I don't know. It just gets on my nerves. Like, seriously, like, you know, like just to see these constant excuses. Like when an Orlando loses, it's like it's never the team's fault. And it's no wonder we have a fucking losing culture. Because we have a losing mentality when it comes to dealing with adversity. It just really pisses me off. And I think we've got to take this one result into context. It's one game, you know, that they're not prepared for. But, you know, they've got the next game to put it right. And the good thing is the next game's in 3 to 4 days' time.
Mm-hmm. It's just hard for a lot of people because it is a rivalry. We did allow Inter Miami to get their first win ever against us in their home stadium.
That's what happens when you spend your spare time going on Twitter, writing Fort Lauderdale, FTLLLL, trolling the other team, trolling the other fans. If you think that has no effect at all on the team or the fans or anybody else, because you know these people read it, you know they're aware of it, then you're completely wrong. You know, there's a quote here about karma that I've found, and it's how people treat you is their karma. How you react is yours. It's by Wynn W. Dwyer. Okay? Mm. Yeah. Treat people better.
I like that.
Yeah. Stop worrying about other teams. Like, stop trolling other teams. Like, this is what happens when you go around pissing people off. You're eventually going to get, you know, you're going to get caught. It's like, as you say, you play with feathers, you're going to get your ass tickled. And that is exactly what has happened today. And it's deserved.
Tickled?
Yeah.
Play with feathers.
This is the thing. I'm in the group chat.
Tickled.
I'm in the group chat, and one person said, you know, well, Fort Lauderdale or whatever asked for, you know, we're talking crap for months. They deserved it. Maybe they did. But guess what? For a whole month, those players have had to stew, like I said in yesterday's podcast. They've had a month to stew over the result. They've had a month to think about it. And I'm telling you, they've not been there, been lazy playing PlayStation all afternoon. They've been working hard because they know that when they get back into regular play, they need to hit the ground running. And we gave them every motivation possible to do it. So we get what we deserve. End of story.
I like that. Well said, Daniel. Very well said. All right, let's do line up and line down. And Adam brought it up. Through the little text message group, that there aren't a lot of lineups, but I'd still like you guys to find one and think about it. So do any of you guys have any that come to mind right now that you guys want to go first?
For the lying down?
Line up or lying down and lying down.
I guess I'll go Chris Mueller.
Okay. Yeah, that's one of them.
Came in, almost scored 30 seconds in. I called for him to come in the half. I think briefly we looked more comfortable before Miami quickly adjusted and then just kept whooping our asses. But for like the first 10 minutes and a half, when we switched back to the 4-2-3-1 with Chris Mueller helping possession and being his active self, I thought he brought exactly what you expect Chris Mueller to bring to a game. And he was his normal self. It just wasn't enough on the night. And then... I think he has a good mentality himself, but he still was on those Orlando City teams that would, you know, get beat and then keep on getting beat. And then they would, after a certain point, their asses just keep getting kicked. It just, they look like they don't want to play anymore. I think that kind of happened toward the end of the game. But, you know, he, I think, was the catalyst for the brief stretch of acceptable play in the second half. So,
all right.
And that's my lion up. My yes. Lion down is the entire fucking team, and so Oscar Pareja. Oscar Pareja.
So your lion down's Oscar
better.
Pareja?
Yes.
Because you just stole mine.
Well, fuck you.
Let's talk about it. Okay.
Okay, we can talk about it together.
Never mind. Let's talk about Oscar Pareja because yeah. I think it was wrong for him to get too cute and try and switch it up, which
I
is something you've
so.
Said a lot. Really?
Like we said before the game, and like, you know, we've talked about like trying a Christmas tree in the past, you know, because
this
we don't
wasn't
have,
a Christmas tree.
It wasn't quite, but that's what we thought it was from the beginning of the game.
Mendez was covering the right flank. He was going even in attack. Yeah. He was sitting in the right half channel. So but it was still 4-2-3-1.
He's still a midfielder, though.
He's still got that mentality and that play style. That is not his position, but where he was deployed is still 4-2-3-1.
So it was a Christmas tree that was in the middle of being chopped down.
Yes. It was all messed up because he didn't. I mean, I would have preferred Benji, Benji is not a winger, Oscar. Benji's not a winger. Okay.
I thought Oscar Pereja, in trying to get cute, but also not really. And he was very good about changing the style of play to match the opponent in the tournament. I don't know what happened here. It was like we just kind of, you know, swapped out some personnel and then kept playing like we were still playing Portland. It was like no tactical adjustment whatsoever.
Maybe he was trying to like change something because like,
I don't know.
He knew they had been looking at us the whole tournament. And so we wanted to kind of
switch the thing.
It a little bit.
It didn't feel well. He switched the shape a little bit and he switched the personnel, but he didn't switch
very
the
subtle
at
changes.
All.
Yes. Right.
We were still trying to play through the middle, you know, build from the back, high press, play through their press. And especially without a natural winger on the pitch, you know, Luis Nani's the closest thing they had to winger. He was dropping into central mid and without those wingers to play those combo plays with the wings, which was a big part of our attacking identity, our wingbacks were useless. Juan and Moutinho didn't have a dangerous moment throughout the game.
There was nobody to combine with.
Juan got up like once or twice, and that was it. In 90 minutes, like, what are you doing? Those are two of your best attacking assets. It's the ability to attack with the fullback from either side, and you neutralize them yourself. I don't buy that it was Miami's doing. We played tons of teams with good wingers. We played Diego Rossi. We played Sebastian Blanco. They weren't able to pin Juan Moutinho back. Why was Manuel Pellegrini able to?
I think part of it is we couldn't play through their press. I mean, if we play this game, I don't know, you know, in a couple. Okay, sorry. If this is our second game of the return to play, not the MLS's back tournament. If this is our second game of the return to play, so we played Nashville first and then we played Miami. I think we do better because our passing's a little bit crisper. We're a little bit more on point and we're able to play through the press because we were not able to do that today. Touches were wayward. Passes
no
were wayward. There is no excuse
in season form, effectively as close as you can get right now. There's a team that hasn't played in a month and you can't get your team up to it and you can't get them properly prepared to. And if you're going to play your style, you got to be fucking good at it. And I saw us be fucking good at it in the tournament. And for whatever reason, it wasn't there. And the responsibility for getting the team up to play is on the coach. And Oscar said himself in his post game, there are no excuses. There are no excuses for Oscar this game. I still have faith in him. And I expect him to be better than the next game.
At MLS Now podcast, my co-host asked me, was Oscar out coached today? So let's just do it now. Yeah.
Yeah,
go for it.
100%.
I agree. Chase, line up, line down.
So my lineup is going to be DK just because, you know, professionally he hasn't even played, you know, two whole games, like two full 90s. And he was pretty heavily involved in both goals. You know, he scored the first, obviously. It was a good play to, like, you know, we talked about the turn and, like, the ability to kind of stick with it and to put so much power behind the ball is increasingly impressive for a 20-year-old. And he continues to impress me pretty much every time I see him step on the field. And even the second goal, like, he kind of received the ball, held up play, and he was fairly calm while he was inside the box. And then he played it out to Chris, and then, you know, Chris put in a nice little cross. But, you know, sometimes in open play, when he gets the ball, even if he completes the pass, it might be kind of behind to the point where it'll stop like a counterattack. So he's up in the sense that, you know, obviously he scored a goal, his first professional goal, and he did well in a lot of moments. But, you know, in terms of like maybe him starting or things like that, I think he's still at the point in his career where, like, you know, young players can definitely get overplayed and it can actually kind of be harmful to him. I think there's a delicate balance, and I don't necessarily think should be starting every game at the very least. And for my lying down, I'm probably going to go for. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say on DK really quickly. I think he's a striker that is really, really good with his back to goal. And then he kind of turns towards goal and he has to dribble and he has to get past a player. And that's just not his game. Kind of like a weird comparison, but kind of like Olivier Giroud. Very, 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 very good with his back to goal. Won France a World Cup because of his hold up play and his back to goal. But turning around going forward, Giroud is useless. Would you agree with that?
I mean, I actually thought that DK was pretty all right. I think that he maybe could have been a little bit more direct. But there have been some passages where he is going at defenders and he's able to hold them off and able to just take on players and create for himself a little bit. Like, I think that he still had a decent amount to do for that first goal, and he did all right. But yeah, I mean, like, there's still just little things in his game that need to be worked out. Like, you know, like I said, being direct towards goal and knowing when to pass and picking your head up maybe and things like that. But I just think all of that is going to come with time. I think that he's talented and raw, and he's not necessarily fantastic at anything barring, you know, his like physical capabilities, which are already pretty high level. But everything else, I think, can very easily come. And I think that he's going to be like a fantastic player in the near future, at least in comparison to like the MLS level.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, all right. He still has a lot to go. And just in most aspects of this game. But for my lying down, I'm going to go with Sebas. I think that it's pretty clear. Just overall, I didn't think that he did much. We've talked about maybe
Pain.
The MLS and back tournament. Yeah, my bad, Adam. I know it's your boy. I don't mean to call him out. But
I agree. He wasn't great.
Yeah. In the MLS and back tournament, he wasn't used right. We kind of said that. And this game, it was even more so. Like, he found himself out wide, which, like Adam said, he was more of kind of like a right mid, where he wasn't like a traditional winger trying to take on players and whipping crosses and things like that. And technically he was the one that kind of slipped it into DK, where DK made his nice little turn. But I don't, you know, Sebas didn't really have much to do with that goal, I feel like. And just overall, you know, he was one of the bigger reasons in conceding the first goal. And just, you know, like I said, in Pizarro's goal, he wasn't really marking anyone in the box. I can't necessarily say it was his fault. But yeah, he was slightly outplayed out of his position. I say slightly, probably, you know, he was far away from where he's comfortable on the field, I feel. And even just when he was on the ball, it wasn't the same that we've seen before. And, you know, yeah. But like Adam said, it's pretty much been the entire team. Nobody really had a fantastic performance, outside of maybe DK and Chris coming off the bench, but yeah.
All right, Daniel.
Okay. I really don't know. I don't even know if I can be bothered.
I'll go if you want me to.
There's one obvious line up, and I'm not even going to bother because DK is getting his praise. I think he was excellent, you know, for a kid to come in and to be play the way he did. Not a perfect performance by a stretch, and agreed completely with Adam what Adam said about him earlier.
Anybody from the bench?
From the bench,
Akindele, Michel, Perea, Robinho.
I think Mueller.
Mueller's been taken.
Mueller's been taken. So yeah. So no.
Nobody. But yeah.
There's nothing. And as for lying down, I mean, I was actually going to question Oscar Perea just because I think he changed up a formula that was working. I mean, I have a belief that, you know, pragmatic managers are good in the sense that They'll win a lot of games, but they probably don't win many, many trophies because they don't quite trust their own style enough to take it further. I feel like in MLS, I feel like if you find a way that works, your best bet is to cultivate that one way of playing. You know, like the goal should be make plan A better. Be better at plan A. You know, stop worrying about plan B, C, D, and E. But really do well with plan A, because I feel like MLS is a type of league that if you can strike that for one season, you're going to win something. And we have a formula that works, and we should have kept with the formula and tried to play the game on our own terms rather than maybe just got a little bit too cute, you know, with the James O'Connor-esque central midfielder collection that we tried. I'm not going to rib on Perea because I think he's a very good coach, and I'm sure that he knows as well that he could have done something different for the game. So that's my only other thought. You know, I mean, I don't even want to bother with the other players. There's just too many poor performances.
All right, well, I've got a couple names that I want to say for lineup lying down. And so lineup, I'm going to go Robinho. I know he came on, he had a ton of space, and he was basically playing in the middle.
I knew you were going to say that. That doesn't make it less stupid.
Yeah. All it is I think he should be the winger sub, and I don't think it should be Benji. Benji is useless on the wings. He cannot create for himself. He cannot cross. He just doesn't. He is a goal scorer. He's a striker. He's being played out of position. I think Robinho showed today that he at least has the capability to be given a chance to come in off the bench for a winger spot and maybe do a little bit more than Benji does, because Benji just ain't a winger. He's just not.
Put him at striker. The saddest line up that we have ever done.
Yes, probably. I don't think Robinho's as bad as everybody's saying. I know he's not great. He's not a world beater. He's not a starter for this team.
And like four of them in those 7 minutes, time wasting.
And in those 7 minutes, he did enough on the ball to show me that if we stick him out on the wing for 15 to 20 minutes, that he's going to do better than Benji Michel did. And that's why he's my lion up. My lion down.
I don't buy it.
Benji did nothing when he came on.
No. I just.
Robinho can dribble. He can at least put a ball somewhere.
I think you have way too much faith in Robinho. I don't think Benji's guarding the wing. I don't think that you can confidently say off of that small of a sample size that Robinho would be necessarily better. Because
Did you see that Meg on trap?
You know who has seen them in large sample sizes? Oscar Pereja, because he sees them every day in practice. I honestly trust that more than effectively less than five minutes of game time.
I think he should be given a chance on the wings off the bench rather than Benji, and just let Benji be backup striker. I'm tired of seeing Benji on the wings because he doesn't contribute anything when he comes into the game. My lion down, there are so many. I think I'm going to go with Carlos because he was so good in the MLS's back tournament, and then he struggled on the first goal. And then I guess he was kind of average for the rest of the goals. You could say Galese as well for being beaten at his near post. You could pick apart every single player in this team, to be honest, so I'm not going to go through it. All right, that is part one. We will get your questions and topics in part two right after this.
That's all fine and dandy as long as you're able to then get people to take over his spot up front.
Look at DK turn on Gonzalez. Perez, a rip. It's saved by Robles. Second shot blocked. Third try. Bounces home. Take a bow, Daryl DK. What a goal for the rookie. The first of his professional career in Orlando City has leveled it up.
Take his butt forward. And in this particular, look at that beautiful turn by DK and this absolutely violent strike. But the resilience from the rookie, he wants to contribute. He wants to make an impact. And not once, not twice, but three times he's able to get the shot. And finally, it pays off to level the score in the 18th minute of the game. Well-deserved goal by the rookie.
And we're back to answer fan questions. And the first one comes from at SpizzoTFL. This is a great question, in my opinion. Chase, it's going to go to you. Why in the world was Urso the deepest midfielder in the early going?
Well, yeah, it's like we said about the entire time. Like Sebas is the one that's more suited to drop back. And Urso has, like, ventured forward. And he's looked very impressive. Like, it hasn't looked like a player, like, deputizing. It looks like someone who is dangerous. And who can, like, pop up with goals and things like that. It would take a couple more rewatches, I think, to kind of pick out what Oscar was trying to do really in any parts of the game. Like, and you know, that's not to say that obviously we think he's a bad coach. Like, he's the sole success that we've experienced so much, or sole reason we've experienced, you know, a decent amount of success this far this season. But, yeah, I don't know. Not the right call, definitely. And he's the one out of the kind of three defensive midfielders that we started that has the most attacking kind of prowess, I feel like. And to answer the question, like, I don't really know why. I think it was just kind of a a poor coaching decision, if it was a coaching decision. Maybe Urso just decided to sit back on the day or something like that, but I can't imagine that's the case. But he should be the one that's given a little bit of a license to go forward, and maybe even he was the one that was a little bit more on the right, because in his limited game time, unless that tournament, he's looked decent. And it's just a misuse of him as a player, which is something that we kind of saw by a couple it's something that we saw from a few of the midfielders today. And yeah, I don't know why it happened. I think that it's a failed experiment, and you know, I don't really want to see it again.
I don't think any of us do, man.
I would like to see is a true Christmas tree, not this 4-2-3-1 hybrid bullshit that we saw.
That's fair.
I would like to see Uri playing a true six. I mean, I guess that's almost a diamond, but like, not really. Yeah.
No.
I want to see Uri playing a true six. I want to see double eights get forward with Mendes on the right, Urso on the left. And I want to see them both getting forward in combo play. And the reason that's important is because it frees Uri up to clean up stupid shit, like when Mendes tries his back heel. And then it doesn't work. Because if that back heel had worked, it might have actually created a scoring chance. We were kind of like in that mode. It didn't work and it created a scoring chance for the other team. But if the impetus is not on Uri to kind of get forward with the team like he was in this game, it was almost like they were trying to like play Uri to just outside the final third and then like have him get it to Pereira there, which was weird and didn't work. If Uri's allowed to play a true six and then have the double eights get up and then have Pereira with the freedom to go wherever he wants in the 10. And then you have Nani on his nebulous left side, whatever he wants to do. And then you have, I would say, I think I still want Tesho at striker. I still think he's the second best striker on the team. It was good to see DK get a goal. I still think Tesho's the right starter. But yeah, I want to see that try to work and then really try that tiki-taka, but then you also have to have cover on the wings for when you want to play up the wing. So you need to basically have Mendes go all the way out you could have Nani was dropping back super deep. That's why that didn't work. So when Moutinho tried to get up, Nani wasn't there for him to play off of, and so he had to stop at like midfield. Like, the whole thing's the entire reason that the Christmas tree system works. It completely went against how we approached this game and how the tactics were set up. And so I don't think it got a fair chance, and I would like to see it in the future because we do have the personnel for it, and it is a system that has worked for other teams in the past.
Yeah,
it does.
We literally played the weirdest 4-2-3-1 ever. We had Nani out on the left in his free roll. We had Pereira through the middle, and then we started with Mendes on the right, but he was more like a right attacking mid. So we had a left winger, an attacking mid, and a right attacking mid. And then we had two central midfielders, and then we had the striker, we had the right wing back, we had the left back, and we had the two center back. It was just strange, and it didn't work at all.
You know, I advocated for the, I think I call it like a 4-3-2-1, but essentially
this wasn't it.
Yeah, it was kind of similar to that, like with Nani and Pereira just kind of occupying a free role type of situation, you know?
Right, but Mendes was not in the center of the park behind them. He was to their right.
Oh, no, I'm just referring back to them. Yeah, I was just referring back to Adam's point.
Like, sorry.
And I even suggested we could play a diamond with the current squad that we have now. You know, I feel like with no natural wingers.
We could. If you play Nani at striker.
Yeah, Nani is a striker, but with a little more license just to pull wide and get to the left or the right, wherever the ball is going, he can kind of follow it and find space, and then you have one guy left in the middle.
I think the key with these narrow formations that we want to see them try, because we do have the players to make a narrow formation work, and it's really good for passing up the middle. The key is you have to have players that can cover the wing offensively and defensively, and so you need, because you can't just send a fullback forward. It doesn't work. It's very easy to deal with. You basically just stick a midfielder out there and say, hey, fuck that guy. You have to send two on the flank if you're going to attack up the wide areas. And you need to be able to attack wide, because if you can only attack centrally, then teams are just going to clog the middle and you're getting a bad time.
I think so we have
the players to do it. It just, for whatever reason, that wasn't the plan tonight, and I can't figure out why that adjustment was never made.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like for sure we could certainly play that way if we wanted. The diamond has been kind of, you know, as a formation, it's kind of been trashed just because it didn't work in the Jess and Christ era. But he did not have the central midfielders we have now. He had a lot of one trick ponies, I think, in his squad. And I think the midfielders we have now are a little more versatile. The only one I think who is kind of tied to one role is Roussel as a six. But I feel like, you know, Mendes, Urso can certainly play the left and right parts of the diamond and get into those areas and support the fullbacks and help with the build up of play. And then also you could see Perea do the same type of thing as well. And Mauricio, he can be the number 10. So we have options, I feel like, that it could work. We've got a more athletic squad now and a little more tactically versatile. So yeah, I'd like it if he tried it. I don't think he will, but if he did, that would be pretty cool to see.
Chase at Tree City Lions says, tonight felt like the same old Orlando City team from the last few years. We play awful. We try and come back only to fall short. I think that sums it up. You know, you see Nani, like last season, coming very deep, trying to get himself into the play somehow. You see him popping up in between the center backs, you know, right side, left side, right in the middle, near striker. He's all over the pitch, which isn't something we really saw in the MLS's back tournament to this degree. He did a little bit, but to this degree. Just letting in stupid goals, just poor passes, not everything coming off. I mean, that sums it up, right?
Yeah, it's a little bit like I'm caught between, like, the biggest issue with this game being the system, as, you know, you guys you put a lot of it well. Or if it is a little bit more of like a mentality thing for whatever reason, just this game, we weren't necessarily prepared. And we look like we had the idea to try to stick to what we've been doing and play out of the back. You know, we had a lot of instances in the tournament where we would have like 20, 30 pass buildups leading to a decent chance. And we maybe attempted to do that, but we just couldn't break through for whatever reason. And we just didn't have much, like a plan B, I guess. We didn't have many ideas going forward. And that's kind of like a symptom of what we've seen in the previous, just all years. Like, and it's, we put a little too much of a pressure, I guess, on the star player. And like last year, you're right. Like Nani was the guy trying to get on the ball at all times. And we've spoke about how in the tournament, Nani was a little bit of a, not a role player, because, you know, he maybe was like the second best player in the tournament, but he was more outside on the wing. He was able to just kind of pick his moments and not force himself on the ball and visibly try to take over the game, which is something that we saw today. And I think a little bit of that is just we looked a little bit flat-footed. And even if, you know, we didn't have the players and the tactics going forward to try to continue playing in the way that we have before and putting together some nice build-up and breaking a press and things like that, like, even when players got on the ball, it looks like we weren't making quality decisions and we weren't comfortable maybe. And we were just not even necessarily getting pressed or anything like that. We were just making errors and giving the ball away. And it's, you know, for this whole game, it's not like a sign of worse things to come. Like you don't play as well as we did and then just completely fall apart, which, you know, we're not going to. But yeah, just this game, it looks like we didn't necessarily have our heart in it, I guess, in some instances. And that kind of combined with maybe some tactical missteps from Oscar here. Yeah, it kind of spelled disaster. And that's kind of why I feel like it felt like performances of old where, you know, those are times where we really would like to forget and performances where Nani looks like he just has to get on the ball and make something happen or nothing is going to come.
All right, at Nesty 407 says, We didn't get out of their high press. Anything through the middle of the field ended up with Fort Lauderdale winning the ball back. Juan was definitely frustrated as well, but better to learn this lesson now than later in the playoffs. So, Daniel, I kind of want to piggyback off of this question and say, have we been found out? Has our system been found out? You know, Juan is clearly our difference maker, and now this is two games in a row where teams have looked at him and shut him down specifically.
I'm not sure it's a case of us being found out. I think today is a case of Inter Miami being, you know, grossly underestimated. You know, Portland were a very good team. We knew that. So for them to beat Orlando was not really a big surprise. You know, I mean, in essence, that, you know, they're a very good team, and we did well just getting to the final. Miami were underestimated by a lot of people, and they have a game plan. They've had plenty of time to figure it out. I wouldn't say that Orlando's been completely found out yet. I mean, if they lose again on Wednesday, then, and it's a similar scenario, then yeah, I mean, we have to start thinking they have. But for now, I feel like today, I think the players put in 50-60% of what they're capable of doing. And that's how we lost today. If they'd have had the focus and the momentum of the tournament tonight, that result probably doesn't happen. It would have been a more closer game. So no, I don't think we've been found out yet, but we do. It does highlight the need for a couple more players in the squad, which we knew already. And we know the front office is looking. We know they're trying to do what they can. So my short answer to that is no. But if we maybe you can come back and ask that again on Wednesday if we lose again.
Hopefully we don't have to. Adam, this one comes from me. I heard Miguel Gallardo on the ESPN Plus broadcast today talking about when he talked to Oscar Pereja about Matheus Aiz. Oscar said, whatever. I know. It's horrible.
Just call him Matthew.
Matthew, fine. Whatever. He was talking about how Oscar had said that he was a player that was able to get the ball on the ground and work in tight spaces. And he liked that he had the ability to do that because we don't have those options at striker. Now here on this podcast, we have talked about Mueller at striker, and he is a player who has that ability. So why are we not, you know, obviously Oscar has way more information than us, and you can say Mueller might not be amazing with his back to goal and two strong center backs on his back or whatever, but you know, why have we not even tried Mueller at striker? When that's clearly
we don't have wingers either. That's why we don't have wingers either. And he's played winger through his MLS career, and I think he's a little bit stuck at that spot now. And so I think Pereja has said, hey, you're good enough right now to play winger in my system. You're going to play winger. That's my opinion. Can Mueller play striker? Absolutely he can. Should he get a look there? Probably. Will he? I am Pereja as a coach trying to win now. And he's found that Mueller can play winger in the system. He can press from the wing. He can create from the wing. He can put in crosses. He has a good crossing foot, which other forwards that we have don't possess. And so that's probably a reason that he's playing out wide. So we talked about, say, IS works out and he locks down that striker spot and then we get a DP winger. Maybe Mueller gets some more looks at maybe a second forward in 4-4-2, something like that, you know? But I think the reason why he's been stuck at winger is because he's good enough there. No one else is. He's honestly if we want to rank players by their just capability at the winger spot on the roster, it's Nani, Pereja, and then Mueller. And so that's why he's playing winger.
Fair enough. Yeah, we do have a lack of options out there. Speaking of wingers, Chase, this is the last question. This is also for me because we're out of questions. I thought Nani had a pretty poor game today, and I don't feel like we've touched on it enough. So do you want to kind of talk about Nani's performance again?
Poor game how? Because I didn't come away you know, sometimes a player scores and it'll cause you to forget a bad performance. But overall, I thought that he was fine. You know,
yeah.
He did all right. So what, but, you know, you might, you know, what is the reasoning, I guess, behind that you thought he had a poor performance?
I'm not going to sit here and say that I thought he was poor because he didn't score two world-class goals or anything. That's not why. I just think we saw him attempt a lot of dribbles again that didn't come off, and I know that's his play style, and we will see that from time to time. His passing looked off. His movement, eh. He did get the goal. That's right. He did get the goal. I kind of forgot that he was the person who put the ball in the back of the net for a second there. So maybe, I don't know. I just think we're seeing the decline of Nani. And we're still, and look, we're still going to see moments, but that can happen over a decline. You know, we're still going to see moments of brilliance, but I think we're starting to see, you know, last season he was pretty good for a lot of games. Whereas we've already seen in MLS's back tournament, he drifts in and out of games, and his dribbles aren't as sharp, and his passing isn't as sharp. And, like, yes, that could come down to we are not up to full match fitness still, but, or match sharpness, I should say. But, I mean, it's starting to become a trend here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you're necessarily wrong in saying, like, obviously, if you look at Nani at the peak of his career and Nani now, he's definitely in, the twilight of his career, I suppose. Like, this is, like, the last stop on his, you know, he made kind of a tour around Europe for a little bit there, and now he's here. But I don't know. I mean, he's still probably fairly clearly our best player, in my opinion. And I mean, I think that he just had to impose himself on this game a little bit too much. And maybe some of the reasoning that we weren't able to play our game, maybe he kind of tried to take too much of an impact here. But I don't necessarily think that's the case. I think it was more so like we were struggling and then he just tried to take it over. You know, I'm looking at the stats. I mean, he did succeed two dribbles, which is like decent number, but yeah, he attempted six. So he was dispossessed a couple times, or at least, you know, the dribble didn't come off. He didn't beat his man. But I mean, he did some defensive work. He, you know, advanced the ball decently well. He had to drop deep. I don't necessarily think personally that it was a poor performance, though I can kind of understand a little bit where you're coming from. And overall, he's definitely in the latter stages of his career, but I think he still has a lot to offer. And, you know, today on the day, I think that he was fine. This isn't what he is as a player anymore. Like, maybe if we got him 2 or 3 years earlier, we could ask him to just impose himself in the game and he could take it over and then we'd walk out the victors. But that's not him anymore. He definitely is more of a player that is capable of brilliance, and he's going to show flashes of it at times. Yeah, I mean, it's just, he was the main guy tonight, and that's not what we want. But I just think he might have maybe been a little bit tired or something like that. But he was fairly creative, and he was fairly influential in a lot of passages of play, and even in all thirds, like, he would receive the ball from the center backs and kind of turn it field and try to play. You know, I thought that maybe he was the second best player tonight. I know that that's not necessarily saying too much, but I thought that maybe him and DK were the only players that didn't have, you know, completely awful performances, I suppose. I thought he was fine.
All right. This one is the last one, and this one actually just came in at Data Bowl. Says, we learned that a three-man midfield of Yuri, Mendez, and Urso is a bad idea. We may have learned that Urso isn't a starter on this team. Oh, and DK is better than Tesho at striker. Maybe we suspected that last one. I kind of want to take this one just because I don't, just to reiterate, I don't think it was a three-man midfield of Mendez, Urso, and Yuri. I legitimately thought it was a 4-2-3-1, Mendez covering the right side somewhat in defense, and then on offense, he was kind of leaning that way as well, as was Pereira. But yeah, that's about it for me. Do you guys have any last thoughts on this match?
I just want to say, Dadable, I respect you, but I think you're wrong on all three accounts, and my opinions on that are outlined throughout this episode, so don't need to rehash them. But I wanted to bring up one last thing. In the tunnel, the players' tunnel in Orlando City Stadium, Exploria Stadium as it's officially known, we have messages on the wall that the players walk past the Orlando City. Well, we have messages on both walls, but very positive messages on one of them. And I think my favorite one is that the players walk past. It says, "All we ask of you is please stay true and play your hearts out." And that's all we ask. You know, you have skill or you don't. You have tactics or you don't, whatever. If you lose because the other team's more skilled or they had better tactics or they just won the chess match of the day, fine. I didn't see a team play their hearts out today. I didn't see a team play together. I didn't see them want it as much as the other team. And I hope and pray that that is a one-off and that it won't happen again. Because that's why I'm disappointed, and that's why I think this is the worst match we played in a long time, certainly this year.
Worst match in the Pray Hot era.
And so if the players can't live up to that standard, then what are we doing here, folks? And so that's all I have to say on that one.
All right, that should just about do it then. Please don't hesitate to let us know your thoughts on our thoughts on the Miami match. Don't forget to leave a 5-star review. Do the survey linked in the description. And Daniel, where can our listeners find you at?
They can find me in the bar.
Yeah, long, depressing night. Chase?
You can find me on Twitter at VamosOCSC and Instagram at ChaseWCrowley. And maybe I'll join Daniel as well.
Yeah, I think we'll all be there. And Adam.
Oh, I have a beer in my hand right now. Yuengling Oktoberfest. Very good seasonal beer from Yuengling if you haven't tried it. Nice. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Kosher Taco Truck.
As always, thanks for listening. We'll catch you on the next one.